his left. Tough shot. Made it. End of the line.
Bad pass. Kept away, and Indiana's got it. Up the floor to Oladipo. He will lay up. Score!
Jones. Watford for the win.
Yes! Yes!
It's Indiana. It's Indiana.
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another episode of Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana University basketball news, notes, and nods to the past. I am your host, Jared Morris. Podcast on the Brink, as always, is a joint production of the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. Go to assemblycall.com/live as soon as every IU game ends and join me and my co-hosts for the Assembly Call IU postgame show, where we break down pretty much every element of the IU game that we all just watched, and then open up InsideTheHall.com in another browser and just wait and click and read and watch as all of their post-game coverage comes out too, and of course subscribe so that you get all of their great Indiana coverage throughout the week. And a quick note, I will actually be in Bloomington on January 30th for the Minnesota game. The Assembly Call crew and I are coming up. We're going to try and make it an annual trip up to Bloomington. But we will be there for the Minnesota game, and we're having a little get-together at Yogi's afterwards. So as many of you who would like to come, would love to meet you. So just come. If you see me, say hi. If you come to Yogi's, it would be great to meet and connect with as many of you as possible. That'll be, again, January 30th for the Minnesota game. Well, this is episode 107 of Podcast on the Brink, and since this is coming out the week that Indiana just broke the Big Ten and school record for three-point field goals made in a game with their 19 made three-pointers against Illinois, I thought it would be interesting to dig back into the Indiana statistical archives and pull out a number. And so today's number for 107 is the number of three-point field goals that Steve Alford made in his senior season. And that season, of course, was the first season in which the three-point field goal was in college basketball, and that was the only season that Alford played with the three-point shot. And for the season, Alford was 107. He took 107 threes, or made 107 threes out of the 202 that he attempted, which was good for 53% on the season. So how good was that? Well, again, it was Alford's first season with the three-point shot. It remains the single season record in IU history for three-pointers made in a season. Interestingly, the next closest seasons are Yogi Ferrell's last two. In the 2013-14 season, Yogi hit 88 threes, and last year, Yogi hit 82 threes. Now, no Hoosiers are anywhere near the record this year. No one's on pace to do it. Yogi's percentage is actually as high as it's ever been. His percentage has gone up every year, but he's not taking as many three-pointers this year, so he's not making as many. And he's made 39 so far. Zeisloft has 38 so far. James Blackman had 37 before he was injured, and Robert Johnson has made 31. So a lot of balance with the three-point shooting for Indiana, but no individual certainly is going to jump up and challenge that record of Steve Alford's, which just looks more and more impressive by the year. Again, when you think about the fact that it was the first season with the three-point shot, and just how the game has changed, because back then it was still almost a bit of an experiment, and people didn't quite know what to make of it. It wasn't like it is today, where you know the value of the three-point shot is so well known, and teams favor it over the mid-range too, and all of that. But Alford clearly ahead of his time, and it just makes you wonder what he could have done with the three-point field goal for all four of his years. But that is perhaps one of the most common thought experiments among IU fans, so we won't belabor it too much here today. But a tip of the cap to Steve Alford for his 107 three-point field goals back in 1987. Also, the last time Indiana hung a banner. Well, we have a special guest for you this week on Podcast on the Brink. It is Rick Bozich, sports journalist for WDRB in Louisville. And he's here to talk with us about his observations about the Hoosiers. He was there in Durham when Indiana got shellacked by Duke, and he was there in Bloomington as Indiana beat Illinois. And so his perspective is a good one for what are the differences between the team from now or from then to now. What does he think of Yogi Ferrell? Why isn't Yogi Ferrell getting some of the national recognition that perhaps some of us think he should? And also, who are his X factors for this season? Guys who need to start playing more consistently for Indiana to compete with and succeed once the schedule gets tougher in February and March. So we talk about all of that and more right now on this episode of Podcast on the Brink. So, Rick, you were at the Duke game, Indiana's last loss, and then you were at last night's game, a historic win that ran the Hoosiers' winning streak to 11 straight. What are the biggest differences that you've noticed up close between the group that got shellacked in Durham and then the team that now sits atop the Big Ten Conference?
Very interesting question, because in the beginning of the Duke game, people forget the Indiana played fairly well for maybe, what was it, 12 minutes, and then it got away from them late in the first half, and it really got away from them in the second half. For one thing, they got beat off the dribble repeatedly in that game at Duke. They couldn't contain, you know, guys on the dribble. They had a hard time guarding ball screens. Duke, in that game, you have to really give them credit. They made a lot of shots. Brandon Ingram, that was his coming out party. I mean, Duke played about as well as they can play. And the biggest thing that people have probably stopped talking about because they're focused on the defense is that Indiana's turned it over so much in that game. So they've cut back on turnovers. They've improved on defense. And, you know, the competition obviously hasn't been the same as it was against that Duke team, but they are playing better.
And to what do you attribute those changes? I mean, obviously we know that the schedule has softened since that Duke game, and we know that now Blackman is out, so that's a major personnel difference. What do you think have been the major differences that have led to Indiana's better play?
It's probably a variety of things. It's never just one thing. I think part of it is pride. I think it wasn't just hardcore fans on Twitter that were ripping them after that game. It was Dick Vitale. It was Seth Greenberg. It was Jay Williams. It was, you know, I think it was inescapable for them to say, you know, this team's horrible on defense. They can't guard anybody. And I think they were embarrassed. And I think at some point they realized if they wanted to have any chance to reach any of their goals, that had to change. I think another thing was that, you know, we got farther into the season and they learned a little bit better on how to play defense. And I think the third thing is the personnel change, where with Blackman out and Hartman in, it's more of a balanced lineup with, traditional lineup with two guards, you know, two forwards and a center, and then maybe the matchups were better. And I think you throw all those things together, and it's each of those things has contributed in some way. But I really do think the main thing has been it's become a point of emphasis, I'm sure, from Tom Crean, and I'm sure from the players, because if you're a competitor and you heard John Gross yell at his team last night, no pride. I mean, I think that they heard from a lot of people that they had no pride in defense, and you can't continue that way.
With Yogi Ferrell, I wanted to ask you, since you've been around, covered IU basketball going back to the 70s when you were a student in IU, and watched some of the best point guards that they've had in the program, Quinn Buckner, obviously Michael Lewis was a good point guard, Isaiah Thomas. Just historically, I guess, where do you feel like Yogi stacks up against some of the better point guards that have played in Indiana?
Wow. He's probably top five. I mean, I'm going to always go with Buckner just because that's the guy I know the best and watched him play. And he started at IU team as a freshman and took him to the Final Four. People remember the 75 and 76 teams. What they don't remember is that when Quinn Buckner was a freshman at Indiana, that they went to the Final Four and they had UCLA on the ropes until Steve Downing fouled out late in the game. And he was so good on defense. You really have to go back and watch film of Buckner to see how good he was on defense, especially with Wilkerson. And Isaiah Thomas, obviously, he's an all-time top 10 NBA point guard, so he would be ahead of him. But I'd say you'd put Yogi up there with any of the rest. He's certainly a better overall player than Michael Lewis. You probably wouldn't consider Damon Bailey a point guard, but he did play some points. So Yogi's right there. He's the thing that I'm most impressed about Yogi Ferrell is his game has had to change so much over the 4 years he's been at IU. He came in as a freshman with a pretty veteran team and had to sort of defer to some of those guys, and he was more of a complementary part, and he's grown over the last few years to be the centerpiece of the team. And there's been so many games in late game situations where he just, you know, makes plays. And so that's what I think needs to be recognized about Yogi. He came in deferring to Holes and Zeller and Oladipo and Watford, and he exits as being the guy who is the focal point of the team in many ways.
And one of the emerging storylines here over these past couple weeks is kind of the lack of national attention that Yogi is getting. I think it really came to a head when he wasn't on the latest watch list for the Wooden Award, and obviously a lot of IU fans were frustrated by that. You know, but that kind of coincided with Yogi playing some of his best basketball over these first six Big Ten games, where he really has seemed to take it to another level. Why do you think he's not getting some of the national recognition?
My number one belief on that is that after Indiana lost those two games in Maui, and were criticized pretty hard by the ESPN guys, especially in the studio, when they lost to Wake and then to UNLV, and then when they got blown out by Duke the way they did, I think a lot of national media people, I think a lot of people that vote in these kinds of things, pretty much dismissed Indiana as a serious team this season. I think they sort of said, you know, they're really not that good. They're not one of the better teams in the Big Ten. And I think at that point, Yogi's public profile took a major hit, where people said, you know, the best, if you're looking at the best players in the Big Ten, look elsewhere. Look at Valentine. Look at LeVert, who, although he's now hurt. Look at Trimble. Look at some of those other guys. And I think that's been hard for him to overcome. I think he's overcome some of it, but not enough of it. And Indiana's going to have to keep winning, and he's going to have to keep playing well. Because there's another vote. I think they'll pick the top. I think they cut it to 15 and then 10. So it'd be hard for him to get back in there after not making the top 25. But there's still a chance. And he keeps having games like last night. You know, again, that's the national TV game where he sets the IU all-time assist record. That might get him back in the conversation with more voters.
And he will need to keep playing like this, because obviously Indiana's schedule is going to start getting tougher, and that's one of the other storylines of the past couple weeks, is kind of the yeah, but. You know, Indiana won, yeah, but Rutgers is terrible. You know, yeah, but it's a young Ohio State team. Yeah, but Wisconsin isn't as good this year. On down the line. These next two games for Indiana, home against Northwestern, which traditionally you don't look at that on the schedule and say that's a measuring stick game, but this is a better Northwestern team, and then on the road at Wisconsin, which just beat Michigan State, how much more will we learn about Indiana in these two games?
I think we'll learn a lot, because I think it was 2 years ago Northwestern came into Bloomington and beat Indiana during the Vonleh season. Pretty sure they did.
Yeah.
And even last year at Evanston, I think they had a hard time with him. Trey Demps usually plays one of his better teams against IU. And we've seen games where Indiana's had a hard time defending Northwestern. They'll isolate people. And Alex and I talked yesterday that I think that didn't Collins come up with some junk defense that he ran against Maryland last night, and Northwestern nearly won the game. So that won't be a blowout. I mean, they didn't blow out Wisconsin at home, so going to Madison will be tough. I know that Wisconsin lost, I believe, three non-conference home games this year, which is one of the more bizarre stats of the entire season. But, you know, Wisconsin has two starters back from a Final Four team who are veteran players and good players, Hayes and Koenig, and tough environment for Big Ten teams to win. So I would expect Indiana to split the next two games, but I don't think either one of them will be easy.
I want to ask you, I know you're an AP voter, from a national perspective, can you remember a year where there's been as much chaos as far as teams that are ranked high in the polls losing? And is that just more of a sign that there's a lot more parity this year? I know obviously there's no super team like Kentucky with last year, and no even really great team like Wisconsin, Arizona, Duke. Is that really just a sign of the parity? And I guess how difficult has it been on a week-to-week basis trying to maintain the poll?
It's very difficult. I mean, we're sitting here on Wednesday, and three of the top five teams in the poll that came out 2 days ago have already been beaten this week. And I think Xavier lost at home. Kansas had lost on the road, and Oklahoma lost on the road. But, I mean, they got beat. And two other teams in the top 25 on Tuesday night won, but needed overtime to do it, Maryland and South Carolina. So the parity is real. It's been getting bigger and stronger every year. I think this year, one thing that goes into it is not only that no great teams, but there really aren't, I don't think there's any great players. I mean, Ben Simmons is pretty much considered the best player in college basketball, and his team probably is going to make the NCAA tournament. I don't think the freshman class, college basketball has become very freshman-oriented over the last, what, 4 or 5 years. I think in the Wooden Award top 25, only two of them were freshmen this year, which is, I think last year there was 9. So the freshmen haven't been quite as impactful. There's no Okafor. There's no Parker. There's no Julius Randle. There's no Karl Anthony Towns. And so more teams have veteran guys, and I think it's created more balance in every league. But it's also weird in that you look at leagues like the Big Ten, it seems like there's a definite line of, like, these teams are solid to good, and then the bottom of the Big Ten in many ways seems worse than it's been in a number of years. I mean, Rutgers and Minnesota and Illinois, I mean, what are they've won one out of 18 conference games. That's pretty unusual.
As far as the hierarchy of the Big Ten, I know this is one thing we talked about a little bit yesterday, where I know Iowa's at the top, but I kind of believe that in terms of long-term potential and who can do the most in the tournament, maybe Maryland's the best team if they're able to put it all together. Do you see who do you see ultimately emerging as the best team from this conference in the long run?
I'm always reluctant to pick anybody other than Michigan State because they all always seem to have struggles at different parts of their season. Usually the struggles have been in November. This year, they were obviously very good. They're one of the last unbeaten teams, and then it's been strange since Valentine's come back. They've lost twice, and they're in a hole in the Big Ten with three losses already, but we know that they usually really start gaining their momentum in the Big Ten tournament and then do well in the NCAA tournament, and I think if you look at their personnel, they've got shooters, they've got decent guards, they've got a top 10 player in the country for sure in Valentine, who really was considered the best player in the country before he got hurt. The only thing they don't really have is a great low post player. That's where Michigan State's weakness lies. But if you're going to ask me to pick a team, I'll go with Michigan State because Iowa's good. I love Iowa. I like the way they play. They're fun to watch. They're usually, though, more offensive than defensive oriented, and their NCAA track record hasn't been great the last couple of years. And Maryland has great point guard. They've got the big guy in Stone. They've got veterans with Lehman, and they've got a Bruiser in Carter, and they've got Suleiman. But it's interesting, the computers, Sagarin and Pomeroy, I don't know what metric it is specifically, but the human polls seem to like Maryland more than the computers polls do for some reason. So I'll go Michigan State 1 and probably Maryland 2 and then Iowa 3.
You know, we're getting back to Indiana. One of the things that's been really interesting during this winning streak, especially in Big Ten play, is how Yogi's performance has been pretty steady, but everybody else has kind of been up and down. And, you know, consistently you're getting good performances from two or three guys, but you never quite know on a night-to-night basis who it's going to be. And really, if you're looking for who's been the most consistent guy since Big Ten play started, you might even say it's OG Anunoby off the bench, who's, you know, kind of given you the same consistent play every game. But Troy's been up and down. Robert Johnson's been up and down. Nick Zeislof to go 0-8 one game and 5-7 the next. Can you pinpoint a guy or maybe a couple guys who really need to step up and start playing more consistently if Indiana's going to compete better when the schedule toughens up?
For sure. I'd say Johnson would be number one. I mean, he had three threes in the first half last night, but he didn't make any in the second half. So he made a step forward against Illinois. He needs to take another step forward and be more consistent scorer and definitely cut back on his turnovers. I mean, his turnovers have been a little high at points this year, and I don't know if he's not healthy or what it is, but since he's with Blackman out, he's going to be playing a lot of minutes, and I think he's got to be a more consistent guy. And then Troy's the other one. If Troy Williams can in any way approach the way he played against Illinois, and I'm not talking about the 21 points, I'm talking about the zero turnovers. And I'm not even talking about the 2 3-pointers he made, because I don't think his primary role on this team is to be a three-point shooter. It's to be a rim attacker and a guy who late in the shot clock can create his own shot because of his athletic ability and driving ability, but do it in the context of the offense instead of rushing down the court on a fast break and forcing up a crazy shot or The other thing that he's done too many times in his career, which is like blasting into the lane and not being sure what he's going to do with the ball, and then throw the ball backwards, and it becomes a live ball turnover that usually becomes a layup on the other end. So if Williams can play more the way he did against Illinois and Johnson, to me, those are two guys, because they're the most talented guys.
Yeah. You know, another guy who stepped up big last night, I mean, everybody did, but certainly in a notable way last night, was Max Bielfeldt, who even had a 10-0 run by himself at one point. And, you know, he hasn't been great in every game, but he's come in certain games. You know, think back to the Rutgers game, how important his performance was there. How important has he been to this team, and how surprised are you by the contributions that Max has made?
He's been a lifeline. I mean, without him, if they didn't have him after what happened with Emmett Holden, I think they'd be in huge trouble, because he gives them a legitimate backup center, because he's got bulk, he's got enough size that he can guard most post players in the league. He's a veteran guy who's played in the Big Ten and realizes why you succeed and why you don't succeed. He doesn't do stupid things, and he's got that kind of like, you know, YMCA game, or like if you're out playing in a rec league, this is a guy that knows how to, you know, reverse pivot or hold the ball and head fake you and get you up in the air and throw the ball in and use bank shots to score. I mean, he's got a very creative offensive game, and he's kind of cagey from the perimeter. I mean, once he made that first one, his confidence level went up, and then he made another one, and then he almost made another one. It's like, if he can pull his defender away from the basket as the backup center, I mean, that creates driving lanes for Farrell and Williams and other guys, and he's been a lifeline for this team. No, there's no doubt in my mind.
One of the interesting things I thought last night, and we talked about this a little bit as we were leaving the arena, was it seemed like there was a couple questions towards the end of the press conference, for Tom Crean about James Blackman being out, whether or not they're a better team with him being out. And I know we talked about this a little bit. I'm curious your thoughts on whether or not you think the upside for Indiana has changed at all with Blackman Jr. being out. I mean, do they have a chance to go as far in the NCAA tournament as maybe once believed at the beginning of the season with him being out? Or how do you feel him being gone changes the team for the long term?
Yeah, well, first, in terms of the question, there are natural questions and people have to ask him. And I thought both Bob Kravitz and Zach Osterman, you know, did it in the way it needed to be asked, but it's a no-win situation for Tom Crean. He can't say that, yeah, we're better on defense because we don't have this player or that player or whatever. I mean, and I know that fans are talking about that, and it's become a topic of conversation, but I think there will be games moving forward where Indiana will show they miss James Blackman on the offensive end when threes aren't falling the way they were falling against Illinois, because he was – you know, he's always capable of hitting two or three in a row real quick. But it's changed I think in some ways, without Blackman, roles have been more defined for other guys. I mean, there's one less guy in the rotation, and you know that Johnson and Farrell are starting a guard, and then Zeisloff's coming in as a backup guard, or OG's coming in as a backup, you know, small forward, or even he could play a little bit of big guard in short periods of time. So I think more guys are getting more minutes. I think they're more comfortable because of that, and their roles are better defined. And, you know, at this point, they've done well enough to win 6 Big Ten games without James Blackman, but I think there will be a game where they will miss him because of he's got at times – elite offensive ability.
Let me ask you a question here in closing about Tom Crean, because, you know, obviously Tom Crean, his time at Indiana has taken plenty of criticism, especially when things have not gone well, but he seems to take criticism even sometimes when things are going well. You know, but now in the midst of this 11-game winning streak, you know, people are happy. You know, I see even more positive things being said about him on Twitter, which is a rare occurrence sometimes. But what do you think of kind of this job that he's done since that Duke game? I mean, I don't think that the seat has cooled any, simply because, you know, we know that the story of this season will be written by what happens in February and March. But how should Indiana fans be feeling about the job Tom Crean has done to get the ship righted?
I think they should be feeling good about it. I mean, people, I think, rolled their eyes or scoffed when he came in that press conference in Duke and made the comment about it was December 2nd and in 10 minutes it's going to be December 3rd or whatever it was he said. And said, you know, I'm just going to keep coaching the team and trying to end. But that's 48 or 49 days later, that's what he's done. And at the time, I think most people just said, oh, this is going to be a long season and this team's going to finish in the middle of the Big Ten and they can't guard anybody and all the stuff that, you know, they don't know how to guard the pick and roll and they make too many turnovers. And I think he's done a good job at improving the defense for whatever reasons it's happened. They've improved on cutting back on the turnovers. And the other thing you got to give him credit for is player development. I mean, you look at, and Alex and I talked about this last night. I mean, I think a lot of people, when they took the commitment from Zizlov before last season, were like, you know, why is he taking this guy? He's just a fringe player at Illinois State. How's he going to help Indiana? And he's shown how he can help Indiana. He went out and got Bielefeld when it looked like Bielefeld was going to go to Ohio State. I mean, Iowa State, Indiana got involved, got him. He's been, like I said, he's been a lifeline for that team. You look at OG Anunoby. Most people thought, you know, this recruiting class had one guy, Thomas Bryant. Juwan Morgan might help in a couple of years. OG might help. He might not. OG Anunoby's been, he was the first sub in the game last night, and he almost every game makes a defensive contribution with a steal or, you know, pushing somebody off the block or whatever. And so I understand all the criticisms of Cream, but if you're going to be fair, you have to look at it and say, as a talent evaluator and figuring out which pieces are going to fit and work in Indiana, he does a really good job. And in terms of developing the skills of his basketball players and what they can do and putting them in the positions to succeed, he does a really good job. I mean, Thomas Bryant, wasn't he shooting, or he has been shooting close to 70%. I mean, there are a lot of big guys in the country this year coming in as freshmen, and I can think of, you know, Labissiere at Kentucky, Chuck Diallo at Kansas, Zimmerman at Vegas, Chase Jeter, a guy at Duke who's doing nothing there. They were all rated ahead of Thomas Bryant, and Bryant's outplaying almost every one of them. So, you know, Crean made the decision to get the guy he needed to get, and he's made him successful. And I think people sometimes overlook that with Tom Crean.
Yeah, to your point, Thomas Bryant remains first in the country, 74.1% on his 2-point field goal. So,
I mean, and that's credit to Thomas Bryant too. But I think you got to, if you're going to criticize a coach for the deficiencies of his team, you say, hey, I mean, he got this guy. There had to be at least four, maybe five or six big men ranked ahead of him in the recruiting rankings last year. And I think Bryant is playing as well as maybe any big guy in the country. I mean, I guess Diamond Stone, maybe. I don't know. He's coming off the bench at Maryland. But, I mean, who is like clearly playing better than Thomas Bryant as a freshman center in this country? I don't know if there's anybody, is there?
I can't think of anyone.
Right. So, I mean, that's part of coaching. I mean, people always – the things about Crean that people criticize have been the defense and the turnovers. Those have improved this year. But you look at him and say, in terms of scouting and evaluating guys, he's good at that. I mean, I can't think of many other coaches that find guys that are, you got to call OG Anunoby a sleeper, and he looks like a guy who's going to be a really good player over 4 years at Indiana. And for him to be ranked in a lot, most recruiting services, he wasn't ranked in the top 150. I mean, he's not playing like a guy who's that kind of player right now.
Yep. Well, Rick, thank you very much for your insight. We always appreciate talking IU hoops with you, and hopefully we'll get you on Podcast on the Brink again soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you.